Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
As I've said before, when I look in the mirror in the morning, I see a deficit hawk, and they support everything to consolidate this debt, stabilize the debt to GDP, and bring down that ratio in a controlled manner. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to fix it overnight. I would like to fix it by the end of President Trump's term.
Testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
You know, I think on trade, we are moving. We want to move quickly, but these are big issues, yes. And we want to do it right.
Yep.
And as I said, there are 18 important trading partners. Yep. We will get those. And, I think we can have certainty there, but the real certainty we need is this tax bill.
Yep.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We are also at a pivotal moment where we can safeguard our country from fiscal ruin, and I applaud the steps this committee took, sir, on passing the one big, beautiful bill and all of the work that took.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins testifying before the House Ag Committee.
This bill leverages a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and specifically for our farmers, increasing $3.8 billion in income projected, protecting over 2 million of our family farms from the death tax, and cutting more than $10 billion in taxes, again, just in our agricultural community. As the 33rd Secretary of Agriculture, I have the profound privilege of seeing firsthand how our nation's farmers serve as the very heartbeat of this country. Their unwavering dedication and resilience are not merely testaments to hard work. They form the bedrock that upholds our national security, revitalizes our rural communities, and preserves our cherished traditions. Our farmers and ranchers do not rest, and neither do we at the USDA. I'm proud to be at the helm of Abraham Lincoln's People's Department. I'm proud to be at the table with President Donald Trump and fighting for the very foundation of our American way of life.
When asked about the issue of Prop 12 in California, Rollins replied,
"No one is more of a believer in federalism and the 10th Amendment and our founders' vision of the state's rights to be able to be their own laboratories of innovation. So I'll say that first. But second, when those ideas and those rules and those laws begin to impact other states in such a negative way, that is not what our founders intended. That is not constitutional, and it is not okay. The extreme impact of Prop 12, especially on our pork producers, I believe this is a bipartisan question. There, we may not all agree in this room, but I think most agree, even on the Democrat side of the House, that it cannot stand. So I stand in full support of your effort. We're also looking at things we could potentially do at the department to mitigate for some of the consequences of this rule that, again, California has the right to do what California wants to do. But the minute that crosses the border and begins to, again, compromise in such a significant way, our pork producers, we need to act."
And there is concern from both sides of the aisle on raids of food processing plants by ICE officials.
I was with the president yesterday in the Oval Office. I spoke with him again this morning. This was one of the issues that we spoke about. This president's commitment to ensuring that all laws are followed remains paramount, but also combining that with understanding the significant challenges to our ag producers in finding the labor that is necessary to produce not only for their farms to be able to basically stay in business, but also, to your point, this is much bigger than that. This is a national security issue. And the moment that America is not able to feed ourselves any longer, that is the moment that we are no longer the superpower, the preeminent superpower in the world. So that's how very seriously I take this. As you mentioned on April 10th at our cabinet meeting, the president himself brought this issue up and specifically directed Secretary Chavez Duremer, who herself is from a farming background, who is our labor secretary, along with myself and Secretary Noem, our DHS secretary, who also is from a farming and ranching background, to ensure that we are doing everything we can to make sure that these farmers and ranchers have the labor that they need. So the president is hyper-focused on that, understanding the challenges currently at hand. But please know that we are in constant daily communication about how to solve for that quickly, while also working in partnership with this committee. And Mr. Chairman, your leadership on this has been really, really important, as have so many sitting in the room today.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
If we don't pass the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act because they're successful in stopping it, there'll be a 22% on average tax increase for all Americans. Is that true or false?
True.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent answering questions at a House Ways and Means Committee hearing from Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arrington.
They'll lose about $5,000-$6,000, the median household income. They'll lose about $5,000-$6,000 of their family budget. True or false?
At least that amount.
Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Did the top 1% pay a greater share of taxes after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
A much higher percentage, sir.
Did the top 1% that paid 38% of the entire cost of the federal government actually, after TCJA, pay a higher percentage of the cost of the federal government, going from 38% to 45%. True or false?
Yes, sir. 7% more.
And the top 10% was paying 70%. Top 10% earners in this country pay 70% of the freight of the federal government. After the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they are now paying 75%. Is that true or false?
It is correct.
So another false claim during the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passage was that this was a tax cut for the rich and for corporations. Is it true or false that the Washington Post gave the Democrats four Pinocchios, saying $3 out of $4 in the tax cuts benefited individuals, not corporations?
I don't read the Washington Post.
Well, they gave four Pinocchios. Even the Washington Post could not tolerate that misleading and false claim. The bottom 10% wages grew twice as fast as the top 10. True or false after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
Yes, sir. And household net worth increased substantially faster for the bottom
10%. True or false? Did the poverty rate sink to an all-time record low after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
Yes, sir.
Did we have the lowest unemployment rate among minorities and women after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act?
Yes, sir.
How can these things be true and what they're saying true, Mr. Secretary?
I will leave that to
the American people.
To the American
because
people.
Because this is empirical data.
Who had a referendum on November 5th.
They sure did. And this is empirical data. These are verifiable facts. Now, let's move to this notion. I got a minute left. That somehow we've increased the national debt in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Forget for a minute that they, under their control, full Democrat control, added $8 trillion, and under President Biden, $8 trillion to the national debt. 40-year high inflation, soaring interest, all because of their failed economic policies, paying people not to work, expanding welfare without work requirements, taxes, barrage of regulation, record regulatory cost on small businesses, and the list goes on. Okay? And we've all suffered, especially working people. As you said, it was a regressive tax, that 20%+ increase in the cost of essential goods and services. But if you take CBO's static scores, the cost of the bill is about $4.16 trillion. If you take the $1.7 trillion in savings, the largest spending reduction in the history of the United States by twofold, and you put a conservative growth rate, because CBO's growth rate is 1.8 in their baseline. That 1.8 is based on the last 4 years of failed economic policies and unbridled spending. It's not based on the policies embedded in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. President Trump grew the GDP by 1 percentage point from 1.8 to 2.8. Even Joe Biden had an annual average of 2.7. We put 2.6 in there as an assumption, which yields $2.6 trillion. The net effect is we reduced the deficit.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Farmers, right now are finishing up planting corn, certainly sorghum's going in the ground or has already been planted. Wheat all over the state. Some of it looks good, some of it not so good. We have mosaic that's really going to impact parts of the crop.
Tracy Mann represents Kansas' first congressional district and is a member of the House Ag Committee.
We know that where production costs are means that farmers are having tough times right now, given where commodity prices are. At the same time, cattle prices have never been better. And so the livestock industry continues to do well. But, a lot of concerns about our corn, wheat, and milo and soybean producers in the Big First.
And on Tuesday, House Ag Committee hearing from Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
Yeah, well, excited to have the secretary in front of the House Ag Committee today. when she got sworn in earlier this year, Tony, 3 days after that, she was in Kansas. She came to Southwest Kansas, Garden City area, toured a feed yard, toured a dairy, toured a packing plant in Liberal. So really appreciate her getting out, talking to ag producers firsthand. Today, excited to hear her talk about the trade mission that she was on in India. I think that's a huge opportunity to expand the India market for ag products, New World screwworm, which I know they're working on, a whole lot of other issues. The USDA is very busy right now, as we all know, and I'm looking forward to getting the update straight from the secretary.
Even though Congress has yet to pass a new farm bill, he does say there are many elements in the One Big Beautiful Bill for ag.
You know, in many ways, a lot of provisions from a farm bill were able to get included in the Big Beautiful Bill. Strengthening crop insurance, very important. We're able to do that. Raising reference prices, very important. We're able to do that. Also, the tax provisions in this bill matter a lot for agriculture, making sure that our ag producers don't see income tax hikes. But also in this bill, raise the estate tax deduction exclusion, basically. You know, is very good for our ag producers, you know, to reduce estate taxes. So a lot to like in this bill for agriculture.
But he also says it's top of mind that farmers are facing very challenging times.
Oh, very, very much so. It's top of mind almost constant. And that's just where input costs are and how they've increased the last several years and where prices are. It just doesn't work. And so, you know, making sure that at the very least we have the risk management tools in place for ag producers, crop insurance, absolutely essential, but also raising reference prices and make sure that our farm policy helps to reflect the actual conditions on the family farm today. Incredibly important, able to do that in the Big Beautiful Bill, but we need to see that get through the Senate, back over to the House, and eventually get signed into law here as soon as possible.
Back to the farm bill. What's the future?
So a lot of the provisions that I really liked in the farm bill that we passed last May out of the House Ag Committee were included in what we did as part of the Big Beautiful Bill. So, and I tell people all the time, and we all know this, the farm bill is not going to, you know, help do everything to help production agriculture. There's still market risk, of course, but at least it provides some certainty that our ag producers and their lenders need to keep going here in tough times. I've been on the floor of the House 34, 35 times now, urging the rest of Congress to get serious about doing a five-year farm bill. But this bill does provide some certainty. It doesn't replace getting a farm bill done, but is a massive step in the right direction, and I'm proud to support it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
By challenging the decades-old status quo on tax and trade, President Trump is breathing new life into the American economy.
That's Scott Bessent. He's Secretary of the Treasury, testifying before a House Ways and Means Committee.
More than 500,000 private sector payroll jobs have been added since January. Most importantly, inflation in the U.S. is at its slowest pace since 2021, and the numbers we received today take us back to the slowest pace since 2020. Most importantly, we are decelerating cost increases for shelter, food, and energy. After 4 years of price increases diminishing the U.S. standard of living, inflation is showing substantial improvement due to the administration's policies. Furthermore, the labor market remains strong with low unemployment and plentiful labor demand as job openings remain high. This strength has been exemplified in the recent performance of the stock market and consumer confidence data. The president's bold leadership on these issues has laid the ground for a golden age economy. With your help, we can build on that foundation to create even more prosperity and abundance for the American people.
When it comes to tariffs and trade, and primarily trade with China, Besson explains.
China currently has the most imbalanced economy in the history of the world. They now have an approximate 30% share of global manufacturing, and they continually grow their manufacturing base. They are in the midst of a real estate downturn, some may cause a crisis, and they are trying to export their way out of it rather than take domestic measures such as increasing consumption, dealing with banking problems, or dealing with the real estate crisis. They cannot be allowed to export their way back to prosperity, which would mean substantial decreases in the standards of living, not only for the United States working Americans, but for working citizens across the world. Our negotiations with all countries seek to bring fairness. And I will echo President Trump's remarks. As there are 18 important trading partners that we are in fulsome negotiations with, many of them are coming to us with unimaginably good trade deals to bring down tariffs, non-tariff trade barriers, which the academic research has shown to be can be even more pernicious than the tariffs, currency manipulation, and the subsidy of labor and industry. But as these countries come to us, and I look at the list, and I think, how could this have happened? How could this have happened that the United States willingly became party to such fair, unfair, and unbalanced trade? And as President Trump has said, I don't blame the other countries. If you could get away with it, you should. It was those sitting behind the Resolute desk or those making trade policy who've allowed this to happen over 40 years. And we are determined to rebalance that for the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Over the past several months, I've met dozens of family farmers and producers across this country. They've represented operations of all different types and sizes. Despite their many differences, there was a common theme between all these meetings: the lack of certainty.
House Ag Committee hearing on Wednesday with Ranking Member Angie Craig from Minnesota and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins.
Every farmer, grower, rancher, and producer has said that they need more certainty. And despite this administration's promise to put farmers first, we've seen that many of the actions are actually harming them. We've seen trade wars increase instability in farm country and surrender market access to our competitors like Brazil. We've seen USDA programs that farmers rely on for income frozen or eliminated with little to no explanation. And on the ground in districts like mine, local FSA, NRCS, and Forest Service staff are being let go. Wait lists are getting longer, and fewer USDA staff are available to help family farmers navigate the agency's incredibly popular and impactful programs. And the administration wants to gut a title of the Farm Bill in reconciliation.
Rollins says she wants it to be made clear no USDA employees have been fired.
The bottom line is this, that no one has been fired. There were 15,000 USDA employees who took the resignation, the deferred resignation, but no one was fired. So I think that's really important. In a normal year, madam, we'll have 8,000 to 10,000 attrition rate. So while I think there's been a big narrative about how all these important people have been fired, that was not the case. What we have done, and yes, to answer your question, is a very careful review. Yesterday in the Oval Office, we talked about our fire, our wildland firefighters. They're at 96% full, meaning we are ahead of where the Joe Biden USDA was last year at this time to prepare for wildfire season. To your point on the FSA offices, what I have asked every member to do, and I know you have my cell phone, I welcome every member, Republican or Democrat, to call me directly with specific examples, and we can get on that right away, because that forward-facing part of USDA with our rural communities and with our farmers is of priority to me.
And obviously, trade or lack thereof is high priority.
Since we're losing market access in China, what markets are you targeting to help U.S. soy producers compensate for the market access that they have lost?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. And I know in your comments you mentioned the farmers and trade and the uncertainty, and we certainly realize that. We are very aggressively, specifically on our row croppers, but to soy, for example, really working to expand the markets. Last week, I was in Italy. Interestingly, Italy, of course, the government of Giorgia Meloni is very aligned with President Trump. They are very open. But Italy, again, as an example, imports about $75 billion in agriculture products. Only $1.7 billion comes from our American farmers and ranchers. And this is one of our best friends around the world. So we had great conversations specific to soy on how we get, which is the number one import, but not nearly enough, how we get more of that into Italy, into the EU, into Japan, into India, into
Madam
Vietnam.
Madam Secretary, I'm sorry.
And we'll
I've
continue
got 40
to
seconds.
Do that.
I'm going to reclaim my time. And
yes,
China
ma'am.
Represents 50% of the U.S. soybean market. Wouldn't it, I'm not going to ask, but I believe it would have been a better strategy to go get these markets before you do an across-the-board trade war that decimates 50% of the market.
About
so
1 hour ago, the president announced a deal with China. So
then,
that is being solved.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins in front of the House Ag Committee. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
At the age of 78 years old, I've spent almost 4.5 decades working the land. I still wake up before sunrise. Most days, like my peers, I'm still going strong because there's more work to be done.
Jim Alderman is a farmer from Boynton Beach, Florida, testifying recently before a Senate committee on aging.
According to committee's report, the average farmer is now 58 years old in Florida. Nearly 40% of our producers are 65 or older. We're proud of our experience and knowledge, but the question I ask is who is coming behind us? That's the part that keeps me up at night. It's just not growing the crops. It's passing down the knowledge, discipline, and the way of life. But that chain of succession is breaking. Nationwide, less than 9% of the farmers are under 35 years of age. And then the numbers are even more sobering in states like mine. Young people want to farm, but they're running into walls, such as land, expensive land costs, expensive equipment costs. The cost of financing is very difficult. The big question is, why are farming selling out without young men and women stepping in? The incentive to make a profit is not there. We may ask, why can't they make a profit? The first reason comes to me is that the imports are being shipped into this country below our production cost. If a farmer cannot make money, he's not going to expand his operation. If his opportunity to sell land, which he has farmed for years, comes, sometimes the opportunity is too great. They sell, retire, and then development comes, parking lots, residential communities, and no agriculture. How can we help farmers make it so we can be competitive with our neighbors to the north and our south? We have to be on the same level playing field. Another problem farmers have is the invasion of invasive insects and diseases that have entered our country from other countries. For example, we've seen the citrus industry with citrus greening has devastated the citrus industry. We have gone from 240 million boxes of oranges in production to around 40 million boxes today. All because of an insect that came in with bacteria that causes citrus greening. I think that it would help our country if we had a better inspections at our ports of entry to combat the invasion of insects and diseases that come from other countries. One of the other problems we have is that we're being overregulated. Food safety is of primary concern for Alderman Farms. We're very careful to make sure that we have the safest produce coming from our farm. Presently, we have several food safety inspections. It would be great so that we could only have one that would serve for all the different inspections that are required. Again, farmers must make a profit. They must make money to continue their operation, or they will take the easy way out, sell their property, and retire. Free and equal trade between our neighboring countries is a must, and as you know, labor is a major problem in agriculture. We are now dependent on H-2A labor from Mexico because we cannot get enough domestic labor to harvest our crops. Agricultural labor reform is a must. If we want to sustain agriculture in America, we need to smooth the path between generations, which means investing in beginner farmers programs, expanding technical assistance, and offering incentives like estate planning support, and make it easier to transfer farms without losing the land or the legacy. These aren't just policy tweaks. They are steps in our food system to prevent eroding one generation at a time. So I come before you today not just as a farmer, but someone who cares deeply about the future of our country's food supply. We need strong bipartisan action to support aging farmers, invest in new generations, and keep American agriculture alive and well for decades to come.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
These are hardworking people who, they do manual labor, they keep their books, they buy equipment, they make business decisions, and you know, I think that the certainty and the permanence here is going to be very, very important.
It's invaluable.
To know that it is going to be there.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee.
Right. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned 90% of the farmers supported President Trump. I actually, within the past 48 hours, with my Chinese counterpart, I told the Vice Premier that you did not make good on your ag purchases, right. And President Trump's number one constituency, they are our farmers, and we expect that will be made good.